Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 112 of the Vex on Vex podcast. My name is VexX. Today we are joined with a friend, if you will. His name is Lee. How are you, sir?
Good, thank you. And how's everybody out there?
I think they're good. You can't hear them, though. So they always do that thing like it's radio. It's not really radio.
Close enough, though, right?
I don't know. It's a different animal together. Like, the way they listen to podcasts, like you're driving to work, you put on your phone, and you kind of like listen to that shit and like digest it. They put up our shows on Monday because they find it's like the most popular download time of the week.
So when everybody decompresses and wants to still relax and listen to something good.
Well, no one wants to. I mean, I don't know. You're driving to work, I guess. I don't know. I listen to a lot of podcasts when I work, actually. It's kind of cool. Do you know who Marc Maron is?
No.
You never heard of Marc Maron?
No, I have not.
He's a comedian. He was a comedian. I guess he still is. And he has a podcast called What the Fuck, WTF. And he interviewed like Barack Obama, like a lot of big names at this point. But you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, but I will, after we're done here, I will have to look him up.
Well, you know who Joe Rogan is, right?
Of course.
He was before Joe Rogan, technically.
So he's the OG.
He kind of is, actually. And he was like an alt comic in New York. Remember Sam Kinison?
Oh, of course.
So Sam Kinison was like a partier in the 80s.
Yes.
And Marc Maron was the door guy at the Comedy Store. And he was in the inner circle of the party, but he was like a lower end because this is, you know, 30 years ago at this point. No longer, like 35 years ago. And 34? Something like that. So Marc Maron was a young man. And now he's like an older dude. Kennison's dead and he's become like, oh, he had a show on briefly on IFC. Remember that network?
Oh, sure.
The Marc Maron show that clearly you didn't watch. Actually, I think it was just called Maron. But it was cool. Little weird sitcom situations.
It's good that Sam Kinison has given future generations more comedy.
It's funny to say that because Marc Maron kind of hates him.
Oh, wow.
Well, that ended bad. Like, I don't do copious amounts of cocaine, but if you do copious amounts of cocaine, things happen.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take the word on their part.
All right, you didn't even know we had a podcast.
I did not.
So fortunately, you're appearing, which is awesome. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you for having me.
There's a few questions we have to ask you since Absolutely. It's your first time. So when you were 12 years old, right? Think back. Way back in the 80s.
Wow.
What was your top five favorite musical acts?
Okay. Kiss.
At 12?
Yes.
So wait, was Crazy Nights like your record?
Crazy, not, believe it or not, Alive 2 was my favorite.
That's a good record.
Yes.
My dear friend, all right, so that's Ace Frehley guitar. I don't know if you see that or not.
Space Ace exactly. is a god.
Really?
He is my all-time. I actually tend to follow Ace more than I do the rest of the band.
Well, how much do you follow him? He's coming on tour.
Yes, he is.
With who?
Give me a second. I am going
second.
Through one of those mind
No,
things.
No, I'm an old man. I get it.
Yeah, I'm older than you. Hey, 8 months is 8 months. David Lee Roth?
No.
Go on.
Shame on you.
I know. I just read
Alice Cooper. The
why?
Reason you brought up Roth, you know Roth is retiring.
He retired. That's why. He's turning in his boots.
Well, he said dancing shoes is how he said it. So you almost had it. You were turning
I did.
In.
I was so close.
Did you listen to the six-minute dissertation of it?
I did not, but I did read excerpts on
Oh, you
things.
Read it?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was in print.
It's was on Facebook.
No, I
like
hear you.
Else,
yeah. But I heard the thing on Facebook. Somebody gave it to like, well, so I'm a pretty big David Lee Roth fan, to be honest with you. Boozdy, boozdy, bop. You know what I mean?
You should be.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome. For the business I'm in, he's, well, there's Eddie. So I love me some Van Halen.
Man,
you know
rest
mean?
In peace.
It's a year soon. Like, really
I
soon.
I can't believe that.
Choo, 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 choo. Actually, let's look at the wall as I knock something over. Today's the 5th. January 25th is the birthday. Shit, it's tomorrow. It's 1 year tomorrow that he passed away. It's good that we're talking.
Yes, absolutely. The world lost a superstar.
So you're a big Ace fan.
I am a very big Ace
Did
fan.
Did you buy Space Invader a couple years ago?
Of course. We'll say I bought it. Sorry, Ace.
You did make that face. We're not going to delve into that further. So Kiss is number one.
Yes.
What else do we have?
Led Zeppelin.
I hate Led Zeppelin.
Oh, come on.
We can discuss it, though.
Yes, we will.
I'll explain to you why they're the worst. All right, who else?
Okay, let's see. David Bowie.
You liked Bowie at 12?
Bowie was absolutely my favorite solo.
Now, I got to say, I remember we're the same age. Let's Dance is right before that.
Glass Spider was right after.
No, Glass Spider
was before.
No. Glass Spider's after. It's not as popular.
Right, that's what I thought. Okay.
So when we were 12, it is kind of Glass Spider. But my question is, were you in like, all right, remember how Lady Gaga was really famous a couple years ago?
Yes.
There was a good 4 years where Bowie was that famous.
Ziggy Stardust.
No.
Duke.
After all that. So he's a rock star with Ziggy. The Thin White Duke is another phase. A lot of cocaine. He's out of his fucking mind. A
lot.
He gets relatively sober in the 80s, and he hires Nile Rodgers. Remember that band, Chic?
I do not.
Hey, freak out.
That song. Yes.
That guy produced the Let's Dance record.
Oh.
Now, there's more to it. Do you see this guitar?
Yes, I do.
Do you know what's a replica of, who it belonged to? Do you have any idea?
Did initials give anything away?
Of course. That's why I'm asking. You can say no. It's not our...
I know, I don't, but I'd like to work out
when
the
I
acronym.
Say it, you're going to know, though. So that's Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar.
I do know that.
To my right. Now, the reason he's fucking famous is because they brought him in to be the studio guitar player on Let's Dance.
Okay.
He wasn't famous. He was just a blues guitar player in Texas, right? Let's Dance sells Lady Gaga numbers, like millions and millions of copies. And they were like, let's go on tour. And he's like, no, I'm going to go play with my band. Or we're a blues band. I'm going to do some cocaine, play blues. And they're like, okay, bye. So he leaves. And he got a record deal because he's on the Bowie record. And the whole career, like the next 6 years of his life before he passes away, is because of that record.
Another sad moment in rock.
And that was recent. Like the
January 17th of 2017, maybe?
Well, it was. He died in 91.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm Bowie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. I thought it was Steve.
Yeah, I know. That was my fault.
That's all right. So you're a Bowie guy. I'm impressed. Bowie. But that's my thing. So at 12, were you into the Ziggy Stardust stuff or were you into like the pop stuff?
To be honest, I got into Bowie because of Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was amazed in awe of just, you know, the singing, his talent. And of course, you know, it went from there and I started with Changes Bowie One.
I love that shit.
And then I've listened to that day and night and memorized every ounce of it. And then I moved on to Changes Bowie Two, which I liked, but it wasn't as good as Changes Bowie One.
And I agree with that synopsis, actually, if I'm with you. I feel like he got more eclectic. And it was less hooks and a lot of heroin, to be honest with you.
I mean, hey, listen, when you're friends with Mick Jagger and,
you know, and Mick Keith wasn't, Richard, was it, well, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Mick was always a cocaine. He was an up guy and Richards was a down guy and they weren't really friends. It was Iggy Pop that was the problem.
Yeah. Okay.
So Iggy was heroin and Bowie was heroin. And this is what they did. They were like, we're going to get sober, right? And he's like, yeah, I guess we're going to get sober. Give me 1 second. So Bowie and fucking Iggy Pop to get sober moved to, I can't think of that. What's the capital of Germany off the top of my head? Do you know what it is?
I'm not going to lie, no.
Berlin. They go to Berlin and they're like, we're going to get sober. Berlin's the capital of heroin. Now, I wouldn't know this because I'm not a drug addict. They found out very quickly. The capital of the world for heroin happens to be Berlin. So they did a lot of fucking heroin for a long time.
And that's why they're called the Diamond Dogs.
I think it was after that, actually, because it was with the Thin White Duke era, to be honest with you. But, all right, this is amazing. I got Kiss, Led Zeppelin, I got Bowie. You need two more.
Metallica.
Get the fuck out of here.
What? Come on.
We're going to fight a little.
Yeah.
Well, when you were...
Before the garage.
No, but that's the thing. Cliff's still alive. So you were a huge Metallica fan back then?
Yeah.
That's a little advanced for 12. I wasn't... I mean, I know who Metallica is, but I didn't then. You know what I'm saying? Like...
It was just because...
Any older sibling? You're the oldest brother. I don't think there was a brother.
I kind of hung out with the quote, air quotes here, headbangers.
Okay.
So did I. So, you know, you kind of adapt to what your friends listen to and then you start liking it. So then.
By the time we were in high school, they went Black Album and sold out, though.
Yes, that's when
everybody else knew. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the last one?
See, it's a toss up. You know what? I probably should have thought this through.
No, you shouldn't. It should be off your hip.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I was very one track, you know.
To rock and roll.
Yeah, and I guess if it would have been anything, I don't know. I don't really think I have that many favorite bands. I know it's odd.
So we're stopping at 4?
No, I mean, let me think of what... Let me go into my mental repertoire.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. Guns N' Roses weren't famous yet when you were 12.
I was going to say Guns N' Roses.
They weren't a thing.
No, actually, they were, because I'll tell you, in the late 80s is when they started taking... hold, because I was in camp.
All right, now listen, stop, my friend. The one thing I am very adept at is history of Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Okay, the record comes out in the summer of 1987. Okay,
wait, that's what I said. Late
80s. When you're 12.
Yeah,
they are not known by anyone.
No,
until
not.
A year later when Sweet Child comes out in the summer of 88.
And then everybody put on their wigs and try to act like Axl.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right, and that's probably in the early 90s. I'd use or lose on one and use or lose on
that's
two.
91, September 91, 30 years ago this month.
So
last
it
month.
Wasn't in the 80s or 12, but I mean, you know, that's why I said it was hard. I was one-tracked when I was earlier.
Yeah, so you were a Guns fan.
I'm a huge Guns fan.
Did you see them? Did you see them live back then?
I did. You know what? That was one band I had not seen that I liked live.
You've never seen them?
I did not, and I regret it.
All right, I saw them on the Illusion tour because I was too young when they came around for Appetite, right? I was a kid. But by Illusion, I was a little bit. I was in high school. I thought I was like fucking 14 or 15. And Izzy's still in the band. They had fired Steven Adler. It's Matt Sorum's on the drums. And Skid Row opened. So it was a pretty great show. Skid Row. And like they came out, they were ferocious. I'm a kid. The school had just let out. Now you remember the Illusion records didn't come out until September of 91. This shit's in June. They're playing all the Illusion songs that no one's ever heard. It was fucking glorious, dude. Like it was rock and roll. And they didn't go on till like fucking midnight.
I'll tell you, when I heard November Rain for the first time, I'm like, man, they I mean, think about it. You know, everybody said Axl, you know, couldn't sing.
Who said that?
A lot of people back then, I've heard that he's a horrible singer. And I would just say, are you kidding me? The range from November Rain to, you know, like Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Well, Knocking on Heaven's Door is a Bob Dylan song.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like really.
But, you know, honestly, I like Bob Dylan.
No one likes Bob Dylan songs.
I like Bob Dylan.
Let me rephrase that. Everybody likes his writing.
That's what
he
it
can't
is.
Sing.
But Axl did Knocking on Heaven's Door a lot better.
Everybody who does a Bob Dylan song does it better. The best Bob Dylan song ever is a Hendrix version.
Everything Hendrix did
all on
was a
the
good version.
But All on the Watchtower, that's the version I know, but that's a Dylan song.
Yeah.
You didn't even know that, did you?
No, I did not.
I could tell by your face.
I did not know that.
So he couldn't sing, but he could really write.
This is very informative for me.
I got issues, man. We can discuss
that's
rock and roll
no
forever.
Issues. That's
all right.
Knowledge.
Why is Zeppelin one of the big ones for you?
So I was younger, and my cousins, they're substantially older, and when I say substantially, five years.
That's older. That's a big number.
Right.
Because when you're nine, that's a 14-year-old fucking kid. That's a big deal.
Exactly. Okay. And I heard Dremaker.
Okay.
And I'm like, I was memorized by just the sound.
Mesmerized, my friend.
Yes. I was like, wow, what am I listening to?
Yeah.
And then one of my friends, who was a boss at the time, who became one of my close friends, very huge Zeppelin fan. He made me, you know, a cassette.
Yeah.
And
he dubbed the tapes. That's what it's all about.
Gallows Pole and, you know, Bronya Stomp. Just the odd ones.
Okay.
Communication Breakdown.
Now that's a great one, actually.
Yeah, that's a little more.
That's a great one.
Mainstream.
No, it wasn't. First record wasn't that big, and that's on one.
Breakdown, I remember hearing that as a kid on the radio a lot.
Yeah, but here's the thing: when we were kids, Zeppelin was already broken up for fucking 8 years.
Yeah.
Well, or 7 years, whatever. Like 1980, they're done. So it's like, when we were coming up, they were nostalgia already. Like the kids who were 10 years older than us, that was their shit.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But I didn't get it. And then here's the problem. I spent a lot of time and a lot of effort trying to become a good musician. Like years upon years, decades of my life. This is my life's work, right? All right, listen. You know who the Kinks are, right?
Sure.
All right. You Really Got Me Now, Lola, songs like that. On all of those records, there's a guitar player who's a studio guitar player at the time named Jimmy Page, who no one knows. And he's on all those records. And the guitar playing is meticulous and flawless. Right? You with me? Okay. He gets into the reversion or the retread version of the Yardbirds. Led Zeppelin's original name is the New Yardbirds. They go to fucking, I want to say Amsterdam, but that's not it. They went somewhere on tour and they came back and now they were Led Zeppelin. Okay? All right. When he joins Led Zeppelin, he's already kind of a rock star. He hires an unknown drummer, a studio bass player, and an unknown singer from the country that no one fucking ever heard of, right? Plant could sing at the time, like unbelievably,
oh,
right? But there's issues. We'll get to that. Live, the guy wanted to do heroin, and he wanted to be able to play his guitar sloppy and not fuck up live. So he recorded all the records sloppy on purpose. And as a lifelong musician, it hurts me to listen to that guitar style. It's intentionally lazy.
He's setting the bar low.
Because so when he gets fucked up on stage, he can still play it and not have a problem, which is kind of brilliant. But you never heard Clapton doing that. And Clapton was a heroin addict at one point. When you record the record's got to be pristine and beautiful. And I know it's in him because for a living, on everybody else's albums, he did that perfectly. And he's like, I'm going to do it my way. So that annoys me. It annoys me tremendously. The rhythm section may be the greatest rock and roll rhythm section to ever walk the earth ever. John Bonham is a god.
Rest in peace, too.
His kid's even kind of a god. That fucking bass player is the bass player. If you're in a band and I'm in a fucking band, that's who you want. You want John Paul Jones playing bass because he plays keyboards. He can do arrangements, string arrangements. He's a genius and he's in the fucking band. Now, I'm a singer. If you're giving me a high-pitched vocalist, for some reason, I don't understand it. I never will. Robert Plant's sound of his voice makes me cringe. But Freddie Mercury's high pitches make me cry. So just for me, I am not a Plant guy. I'm just not. Now, I'm not saying he's bad. Now he's bad because he's 175 years old.
Correct.
And when they did that 07 reunion, they tuned down real low.
Unleaded it.
All right. All right. Pretty good.
I went to that concert.
Why didn't they include John Paul Jones? Do you know why? Because I don't know why.
I think there was... those two, from what I understand, Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, wanted just to do... rehash, obviously, the old times in their own styles with no, you know, anybody...
connotation of that.
Exactly.
But the guy's alive, and he's the best bass player.
Why did they use Jason? You know, like, they could
have... Dude, but at the time, no. I don't know if you know this. When Unleaded happened, Jason was still fucked up on drugs. I don't know if you know
that. No, I mean, I know that he had a dark
hair. Remember the movie Rockstar with Marky Wahlberg? It came out in, like, 2001. Kind of right around 9/11, actually. You don't remember it?
Not, no, and I'm kind of a movie buff.
If I showed it to you, you've seen it, okay? It's cool. It was supposed to be like the loose story of what happened to, I'm blanking on his name. I'm so sorry. Judas Priest.
Oh, okay.
How they had gotten rid of Rob Halford and they wheeled in the other guy. This was a loose version of that. So Marky Mark plays this up like he's a singer.
Yeah,
and he replaced an actor and all. Believe it or not, you would like it. It's a fun movie. Jason Bonham, it looks like he's 300 pounds in the fucking movie. He plays the drummer.
Oh, wow.
Because he's a phenomenal drummer. But even in 2000, he was still fucked up. Like, bad. And then, like, 02, 03, he got healthy finally. And now he's more fit than both of us. Like, he's a phenomenal condition. You know who Sammy Hagar is?
Of course.
He's the live drummer for Sammy Hagar and has been for, like, a decade.
That's your guy's rival.
Guy's rival. Yeah, here's the problem. I bought Sammy's book, and I read it, and I love Sammy Hagar now. And when I was a kid, I would not listen to Van Hagar. I was only fucking Van Halen.
Yep.
But I'm a singer, and I'd like to be 70 years old and still hit my notes. And Sammy Hagar can still hit the notes, and Dave can't. Well, he just can't.
You know, but Dave gave more into the band overall, I think.
No, say, who did what?
I think David Lee Roth. When you, people, when you ask somebody who comes to mind, most of the people, at least the people I know, they go David Lee Roth. They don't go Sammy Hagar.
You're right. But you know who sold more records, don't you?
Sammy Hagar.
Weird, right?
Yes.
Like, you took this niche great rock band and made them a global success. I got no ill will to Sammy. Sammy's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Did you know that?
No.
Hundreds of millions. So if you're in Sammy Hagar's band, they couldn't tour because of COVID. You got paid anyway. Your checks came to your house every week. So, like, fucking Bonham got a, like, I don't know what he gets paid, but I'll give you an example. Remember when Axl Rose was doing that version of Guns N' Roses without the guys?
Yes.
Every guy in the band got $100,000 a month, whether they were touring or not. A check came to their house just to be in Guns N' Roses. Can you imagine? $1 million to a year just to hang out.
That is actually something amazing.
But when they went out and they made millions of dollars on tour, Axl kept the whole thing. So it's weird. You know what I mean?
I guess he decided he wanted his part now.
Well, and it's his band. Right. Now, so listen to this shit. We're spinning awfully. I'm so sorry.
No, this is good.
Good. Axl Rose gets back with Slash and Duff McKagan. Here's the rules. In 2016, if you book Guns N' Roses, no matter where you book them, the guarantee is $3 million up front. No matter what tickets they sell, you have to pay them $3 million. That's the contract. Axl takes $1 million. Slash takes $500,000, Duff takes $500,000, and the other $1 million is for the stage show and the crew and the other members of the band.
Well, you know, I mean, all intents and purposes, Axl is, like you said, Guns N' Roses.
Well, he survived it. And so, think about it. Slash just got divorced. And they were like, hey, do you want to make $500,000 a day, 4 days a week? And
yes,
he's
sir.
Like, I think I do. So for that entire summer, and that's only 2016, they just toured last week. They just ended another tour. Did you know that?
No.
A Wolfgang Van Halen is opening.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So they've been going around. It's $3 million just for them to show up and say hello. That's amazing
that
to
is
me.
That is actually
so
amazing.
Every time Slash gets on stage, he gets a check for $500,000. They play 3 hours a night, though. They're pretty great, bro.
I mean, I'm breaking it down. Yeah, that's money. That's money.
Think about that money. But Axl makes $1 million a day just to say, hi, I'm Axl Rose.
You know what? I don't think anybody cares because he's still making everybody $500,000.
And then Izzy was like, I'm not doing it because I want to make equal money. Izzy would have did it.
That's greed, though.
Here's the thing. Let's discuss that between me and you, okay? Yeah. The band's getting back together. So now you're going to go from being an arena band to a stadium band. Imagine if we got Steven Adler and Izzy. Could you imagine? Could you imagine?
It would be off the charts.
Unbelievable, right?
It would be off the charts.
So Izzy's like, if we're going to make all this fucking money, split it five ways. What are you saying? You mean you get a million and I get 500,000 every day? Fuck you. We split it. I'll take seven. You take seven. And that's kind of fair because Guns N' Roses was a band. I don't know how I feel about it. I think Slash and Duff did it right. Because 500 grand a day is still 500 grand a day.
And what's like, not to say that later down the road that when, you know, they're back to mainstream, which I feel that they could be, that that number doesn't go up and they get more.
It's never going to go up.
You don't think so?
I'm in this business. It's never going
to
go
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you have to listen to you for
that. But 500 grand is 500 grand a day. Like, so you fly in on your jet that you didn't pay for because it comes out of the million. Remember the other million? Yeah. You don't pay for the jet. You get off. You play guitar, which you love to do anyway, and they give you 500 grand.
$3.5 million a week.
A week. A week.
Sign me up. I'll put that black wig on.
But Izzy's like, fuck you, no. I want seven. We're all getting seven. And he's like, well, I can't do that for you, buddy. It's my band there, you know? Axl Rose. I don't know. So the band manager of Starscream said to me a long time ago, be the Axl. So we're a business. We're copyrighted. We have all that shit. I own everything. Straight up.
And there you should, because you're the brain trust.
Me and the guitar player. So King Sam, who you don't know, but you will know at New Year's, hopefully, cross yes. fingers. 27 years we've been playing together.
Wow.
A long time.
That's a good relationship too.
He's like my brother. He doesn't have a brother. I don't have a brother. So we grew up together.
Your brother.
He was 15 and I was 18 when we met. Like, I'm 46, bro. Like, that's a long fucking time. We were on stage at 18 and 15 together, and have been the whole fucking time, on and off.
Yeah, think about it. That's you have good chemistry, and marriages don't even last that long.
No, and it's some. And we had a little tiny breakup from like 96-ish to 99, Growing Pains. Got right back together, and have never stopped since. Toured everywhere across America, overseas, everything you could imagine. After we're done this podcast, I'm going to buy a new Les Paul for him today. So you don't care, but I'm going to show you anyway.
No, oh, that's not true.
So see that guitar, the red one? That one. That's a Gibson Les Paul over there. No, the far one, the dark red one. Okay. See this thing with the arm, the Floyd Rose looking thing?
Yep.
Those style of guitars don't have them.
A whammy bar, right?
Exactly. I'm going to get one today that has that.
That's amazing.
I've been wanting that for 15 fucking years. You know the band Rush?
Of course.
I hate Rush, by the way. Like, fucking hate Rush. But that guitar player's signature guitar is one of them with one of them on it.
My question is, though, now, why do you hate Rush?
Oh, my God. Thank God you asked.
I want to hear this.
You're married. I would assume you have relations with your wife. This is not your first wife. You've had relations before.
Of course.
You can't fuck a chick to a Rush record and anybody's going to come. And I mean anybody. But if you put on a fucking, an Aerosmith record, anything from 75 to about 81, everybody's going to come.
And not to interrupt or sidetrack, but just a known fact that you asked my top five bands and I didn't say Aerosmith. I've seen Aerosmith 6 times in concert.
What years?
They were all throughout the 90s.
So sober. You always saw sober Aerosmith. You
yes. didn't see drunk. Yeah, they were pretty.
No, they were sober. Pretty sober. After Pump and all that shit,
yeah.
Permanent Vacation's 87. They've been sober since. And then he broke his hip or whatever like about 8 years ago. And then he had a pill problem, Steven Tyler, very briefly for a few months. But he's been sober ever since.
Yeah, I think the height of it was when Living on the Edge.
My God, wasn't that a great time?
I'll tell you, that was one of their best, not the best album, one of their best albums.
It really is.
You know, I just Dream On is probably my all-time favorite.
That's on, Aerosmith. Is that on the first one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, then Aerosmith Rocks is really famous. I'm going to tell you fucking... Is it Rocks? Okay. On the cover of Rocks, I think, and don't quote me, I'm going to tell you a story. There's a black Les Paul that Joe Perry has, okay? Or in the record cover. Slash's favorite band as a kid is Aerosmith. Now, I don't know what you know about the history of Aerosmith, but late 70s, early 80s, they break up definitively. They separate. Joe Perry leaves. But Steven Tyler kept the train rolling, and they became the opening act for fucking, of all bands, Journey.
And Kiss.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, the Kiss concert I went to in 97, they were opening for Kiss.
No. Yeah, pull your phone out. I can tell you the year. And it was a dual headline, so you're wrong. It was the summer of 03, my friend, because I was there.
Okay. I'm old. Oh, I forget things.
Duh. But what you said doesn't make any sense.
You didn't disagree with the opening. You just disagreed with the year.
I did disagree with the opening. It was a co-headlining, technically. Now, they let Kiss go second because they had the big bombast bullshit. But that was that. And they started that with an acoustic show over. I went to it in Camden. You were there.
No, right? I went to the one at in Philly here.
So where?
The the FU Stadium when it was.
Oh, First Union.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they open up with the acoustic set, and yes, then they play the full. Yeah, there, I was there. 03. Psst, hold that for me. Anyway.
I must have been smoking a lot of weed, and I don't even smoke weed.
So, listen. They break up, and they're like, it's over. We're done, right? Joe Perry sells his equipment because he's like, I'm fucking done. He had the Joe Perry project for a minute. It didn't work out, blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, Slash becomes famous. He can't believe it. This guy calls him. He's like, dude, I have the Les Paul from Joe Perry on the cover of your favorite Aerosmith record. Do you want it? Maybe it's Toys in the Attic. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I don't know, man. Give me 20 grand. He didn't even blink. He gave him the fucking 20 grand and he got it.
That is super cheap.
In the meantime, well, not back then. Now it's worth $1 million. But then it wasn't. It's weird. I'm going to explain that to you in a second, too. Your boy in Led Zeppelin played the 59 Gibson Les Paul. It is now the most sought-after instrument in the world. A 59 version's worth $1 million. Straight up.
Wow.
And your boy has like 10 of them, right? I have a replica of one that I bought for like $4,000 back in 04. It's now worth $16,000. Wow. Because they're that special of a guitar.
And that could probably only... That would probably only inflate at this point.
Well, they all just inflate. That's why they're here. Yeah. But So listen. In the meantime, Aerosmith comes back. They get back together. They do the thing with Run DMC, Walk This Way. Then they make Permanent Vacation, and now they're back, right? Now Joe Perry's a millionaire again. And then he knows Slash. The opening act on the tour is fucking Guns N' Roses. And it gets back to Joe Perry. Oh, Slash bought your fucking guitar, bro. So he calls up Slash. He's like, listen, man, I love you, bro. I'll give you $100,000. Please give me back my Les Paul. And he's like, I can't do it. I love you. This is my. When I was a little kid, I had a poster of you in this guitar on my wall. I can't do it. Here's how cool fucking Slash is. I want to say it's his 60th birthday, but it might not be. Maybe it's 65th or something. When Joe Perry turned 60, Slash came to the party and gave him the fucking guitar.
That's a stand-up
how
man.
How cool is that shit?
Slash has always been a stand-up guy, though.
Well, except for the heroin, yes.
Well, hey, listen, you can't let mistakes define a person.
No, but to me, that's the greatest thing ever. Because Joe Perry's so rich, he'd have given you a check for $1 million, because that's what it's worth now. And he's like, no, man, I love you in here. And that's, to me, so cool. Now, Appetite for Destruction is a great record, right?
Very good.
I don't know if you know this. The Les Paul, the Gibson Les Paul, air quotes, that he plays on that record, is not a Gibson. It's a replica of a Gibson. Did you know that?
No, like
that. Oh. You like Alice Cooper at all?
Yeah, of course.
The same guitar is on Billion Dollar Babies. Isn't that
the
fucking...
same exact?
No, the guitar.
Oh, that guitar.
So listen to this shit. Alice Cooper is now a solo artist, but it was a band. It was five guys called the Alice Cooper Band. Do you understand?
Yes.
They broke up. And when they break up in the 70s, the guitar player sold his fucking gear. And it wasn't a 59 Gibson Les Paul. This guitar Luthor, whatever you say, a guitar maker, built versions of them because he couldn't afford a 59. So he made his own, but he got really good at it. So this guy took it to the guitar shop. He's like, well, I was an Alice Cooper. I need money. My kid has to need fucking Dennis, whatever. He sells it. Maybe he sells it for $5,000, which is a lot of fucking money in 1978, right? So he sells the fucking guitar. They take all the electronics out of it because the way guitars work is the wiring from the 50s is superior to the wiring today. It's just the way it is. The boards were different. They were heavier. They have a tone to them. They gut it. They put modern electronics in it, but it still feels that neck is the same, right? Here comes Slash 10 years later. He's got a fucking producer. Slash sold all of his equipment for heroin. And it's time to make the record. And the producer's like, I got you, son. And they take him down to the guitar store. And he's like, this isn't a real one. But this one is a good one. And we'll put it on store fucking spec. He paid it off eventually. And this is the guitar on Appetite for Destruction, right? Now it becomes famous. Now Slash has money. He goes to find the builder. The builder died.
So now he's stuck with his replica.
He went out and bought two others. For an obscene amount of money. Because this builder made a better guitar than Gibson did, because it was all he did for like 25 years of his life was replicate this guitar, and he improved on it. So this builder, whose name escapes me, is no longer with us. He would spray paint the guitars in his fucking apartment and close the windows and breathe the fucking fumes, and he got cancer and died.
Wow.
So Slash now has three of those Gibsons. He then gives it to Gibson, who then makes replicas of it, and I bought one of the replicas.
So basically it's a replica of a replica.
Isn't that fucked up?
That is actually awesome.
But it's better. And no one knows why. Like, that guy just nailed it.
Because it was a personalized piece of equipment instead of mass-produced. Also.
I agree with that sentence. Yeah. Well, no, I want to stress something. In 59, Gibson wasn't really mass-produced either. They were pretty personalized. But to them, that was just their guitar that year. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't... I don't know.
I think when you have somebody who isn't well known and they put their heart and soul in the song, and it could be mean a little more.
I agree. And like, but he worked on it for years and years and years. Like, he, anyway, that went down the rabbit hole, didn't it?
Hey, listen, let's find Alice.
Say that again?
Let's find Alice.
Oh, okay. That's one of my lyrics, actually. Called DeLorean. All right. So that's my Zeppelin beef, okay? Lazy guitar parts, which make me sad in my heart. But I'm glad you like them. I love that you love Kiss. And Alive 2 is great, but when I was that age, the record that came out was Crazy Nights.
Crazy Nights.
And I remember my dad, we went to like Sears, and Sears had a music department off to the side. And he's like, all right, you can get two. Because they were like $5 or something. I didn't have any money. It was
good
fucking...
Good old cassettes.
Right? And I got the Fat Boys. What was it? Oh, I don't know. I can see the cover, and I can't think of the title of it. Anyway, the Fat Boys are back or something. What was it? They covered a song. Anyway, there was the Fat Boys, and I got this Kiss record that I didn't even know. I was like, oh, the new Kiss record. And my dad's like, okay. Crazy Nights, this day is like my jam. I love that
such
shit.
Such a good cover, too, with the broken glass.
Yeah, man.
No, I like that. I was but post-makeup.
Oh, definitely.
But I was one of their better post-makeup.
Makeup's 83. They yes, take it off. So yeah. Everything passed. And
I wasn't
then,
a fan of Hot in the Shade.
That's kind of the end of it. That's funny you say
though,
that.
My wedding song is from a song in Hot in the Shade.
If you say Forever,
yes, it was.
Do you know who wrote that song?
I actually do know it, but who? Being old, I forgot. I know the background to it, and it just eluded me. So the minute you say it, I'm going to be like, okay.
And I can't think of his fucking name, but he became that fucking guy. Ah! All right, hold on.
Not Mick Ronson. No,
No. Ladies and gentlemen, hold on. We're going to look this shit up. Michael fucking Bolton. Right before I was going to get my phone out and look, it popped into my head. So Michael Bolton, you probably don't know this, was a metal singer. He like came out in like 83 or 84 with a heavy metal record with a giant crazy afro.
Really?
And like Eddie Trunk, you know who Trunk is from that metal show?
Yeah, yep.
He was like a fan. He was like, hey, this is like the next rock guy. And then nothing happened. And then he just kind of sold out and became like.
How many times did we probably see him on Headbangers Ball?
Well, no, because it didn't exist back then. But yes, no.
We've probably seen more people though. There's a lot of people that were on Headbangers Ball we probably didn't realize at the time.
Well, I kind of know all those.
Yeah.
I got problems, brother.
Is that a problem? I don't think so.
No. Like, because how do you pick up a girl going, hey, do you know who played on that record in 1986? They don't give a fuck, dude, but I know this shit.
Maybe they do.
No, they don't. The girls who I want to have sex with don't want care. Like, Monsters do, with like, you know, four fucking chins and shit. I remember the 80s.
Hey, they need loving too, though.
Not from me, sir. Not from me. I gave it the office, as they say.
Yes, I gave.
So, do you have a Pac-Man game in your house? You're wearing a shirt.
Ironically, I did have a arcade cabinet.
Yeah.
And it had about 30,000 games on it.
30,000?
Yeah,
that's much more advanced than mine.
Yeah, it was put together. I put it together. My friend.
Why you say the word had? That scares me.
I put it in storage when we moved.
Sure.
And it just never kind of made it back to my house.
Was that her intention or was
no,
that your intention?
No, she didn't mind it at all. She actually would play once in a while.
Yeah, 30,000 games.
Play Miss Pac-Man. Yeah. Out of all those games, Miss Pac-Man. Okay.
No, girls like Pac-Man. When my mom was alive, she was obsessed with Pac-Man. Remember the Atari 2600?
2600, original.
And she would play Pac-Man. Do you know how to beat the original Pac-Man?
You know what? There was so many ways that you had to go a certain way on the board.
No. Do you know how you beat it? You have to play it for like 8 hours and reset it to zero.
Oh, like flip
and
it.
She did that shit multiple times in my lifetime. Like I would go to school and I'd come home and she's like, I'm like, what are you? She's like, shh.
She should have been on the circuit.
She was hyped, dude. She really enjoyed
that's awesome.
But she never worked, not worked, she never played in an arcade just on the 2600. She was like obsessed with that fucking game for a while. She got obsessed with Mario Brothers for a while, too, when first
everybody got obsessed with Mario Brothers, though, for the most part.
I remember being like a little kid, and my dad wasn't a video game guy, but he had adult, like, what's the word? Reflexes. So he could just play these games, and I would get so mad. He's like, you just gotta practice. You'll be fine. I'm like, Donkey Kong? How hard is fucking Donkey Kong?
Donkey Kong's still hard.
To this day.
That's hard.
Did you see the documentary on that? The fucking Chasing the Score?
I did see part of that. I seen
the King of Kong, it's called. Go ahead.
Now, did you see the one with the, I think it was connected to the E.T. game. how they had like a million of them.
I saw the E.T. like one.
Millions, and now they're in landfills.
Yeah, that was on like HBO for a little while. I saw that one. Yeah, they dug them up, actually. Yeah. There was like a whole thing.
And they still had a lot of them that were...
I hated that fucking game.
That was,
I mean,
made no sense, that game.
And I, my parents bought it like everybody else's parents.
Everybody did.
And then you, it was weird because we didn't have phones back then. So this was the focal point. They spent like $40, maybe not, maybe $20 on this fucking game.
Yeah.
You got to play it. And it was horseshit.
I just remember not understanding it. I say to my mom or dad, I can't remember. I said... Why is E.T. trying to pick up shit on the screen? It's supposed to be Reese's Pieces.
I heard that too.
Looked like shit.
And then he kept falling down in the fucking hole. Everywhere I went, I fell in the hole. Then he you got to fly up with your head.
Yeah.
Oh, it was the worst.
It was just as bad as that Raiders of the Lost Ark game.
I never played that one.
You saved yourself years of therapy.
Do you know, I was never a fan of Raiders ever until they did the Last Crusade one, which is, I think, the third one.
Normally, I would say, hey, we're going to fight with that. But you know what? I love all the Raiders, and I love The Last Crusade.
That's my favorite. And I've seen them since. I've seen the others. But for some reason, the whole dynamic with him and the dad, like, it was
Sean Connery just killed it.
And then, like, you know, we're talking about, like, the fucking cup of life, man. Yeah. The Holy Grail.
You have chosen
wisely. And then every time I get divorced, I'm like, he did not choose wisely.
He chose poorly.
I think of that every time.
That's the story of my life, too.
No, you're successful. So
I took three times, yeah.
But you have three? I thought you had two.
There was that in between. It was almost marriage.
No. Don't give me the A word, motherfucker. I've had divorces. Divorces. You had 10 years with a girl and you didn't marry her?
Yeah. And then the funny part was that is when I proposed to my wife.
Yes.
At dinner. It was at Christmas dinner. My family was there. And everybody's like, wow, ooh, ah, people crying. It was crazy.
Yeah.
My brother left, and as he's walking in, I was like, man, his old girlfriend waited 10 years for that.
Oh.
It was to the day. It was the truthful and most funniest thing I've ever heard.
What happened to her, if you don't mind me asking?
You know what? I don't know.
You don't follow up?
I do not follow up. That was one of those things that, well, let's put it this way, and you'll understand from a previous conversation. Excuse me.
Yes.
Red hair.
I'm going to say it. If you have red pubic hair and red hair come out of your scalp, you may be the spawn of Satan. You're evil.
And there is no argument there.
Like, there might be dudes who are cool that are redheads, I guess. I don't fuck dudes. But the chicks, man. The chicks, man. And your wife knows one that I knew.
I don't know how good that is.
It's fucking creepy. At least I got to see a flashback picture. I guess I should have four kids. Dude, people having children. People making people. Like, what is that, man? Yeah,
four kids must be the magic number. Oh, we're talking about the one, the blonde that has the four kids.
No, the redhead.
The redhead has four kids?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, her uterus must have dropped out.
Hey, I don't make kids, man.
No, neither do I.
I'm a pull-out king, as they say, sir.
Hey, it worked so far. That's why I don't snip it.
What? Just do it.
No, I told you I would.
Why?
I can't afford the peas.
I don't believe it. Like, you got to do it. When Tommy Lee did it, I was like, all right, that's all right.
No, Tommy Lee probably has so many illegitimate kids.
So do I. I've toured, motherfucker.
That's all right. But you know what, though? You probably make good-looking babies. I shouldn't procreate.
Tommy Lee's kids are gorgeous.
No. I'm talking about me.
Well, that's a weird sentence. Let's not discuss that in great detail. You don't know what your child would look like. Right. You'd love your child.
Sure.
You have no desire to have one, huh?
None.
I mean, it's weird. I don't have this, like, need, right? But then I had a stepson for a few years, and I really took to it. And so my wife at the time had a regular 9-to-5 job. And obviously, I come and go as I please. I have my own company. So I would take him to school in the morning. Then I would go to work. I'd pick him up from school. I did his homework. I gave him a snack. I got, like, tight with this. I told him how to fucking hold the pencil right. Like, we were heavy. So I know I could do it. And then I had a roommate here for a while. I felt like his fucking parental unit for a couple years there.
I'm pretty sure that I think that was more of a parental unit than your stepson.
So I know I can do it. But then, I don't know. Like today, I got up and I got my Corvette tinted. That's nice, right? And I'm going to go buy a guitar. You can't do this with the little kids running around. You got to like feed the kid or something. They need food and like attention. I don't know, man.
It's a weekday. It's optional.
We're going to move right along. First concert you ever saw. Who was it?
First concert was Aerosmith.
Great. In the
Aerosmith,
90s, though.
Yes, early 90s.
So you just got out of high school?
Yeah, 92.
Yeah. 92. That's when they did the fucking Get a Grip shit.
Yeah, Get a Grip. Exactly what it was.
It was so
Hit
good.
The floor.
It was so good. I remember they had this big fucking curtain around the stage on that tour, right? And then it would drop and you'd get a grip right across his stomach. Do you remember that?
I don't.
Creepy
I
bastard.
Wish I could.
I remember thinking, like, he's a little too old to be a sex symbol at that point. He was like 50. I was
thinking
like, yeah,
about
bro.
It. He wore 50 good.
No.
I don't know. I think, well, now looking at him in his 70s, he looks like a grandmother.
He did then, too, really. But he could still sing. And still can sing. You know, he was almost in fucking Zeppelin. Did you know that?
No, I did not. So that would have been amazing.
Well, all right. How do I'm going to tell you the story. Led Zeppelin does in 07, they do the reunion. And they're like, listen, we're old. This is it. This is our time. Because this is 14 years ago. They're like, we could go out and do this around the world and make gobs of money. So Plant, do it. And he didn't say no. Right? But he leaves and he went and did it. Remember he did a fucking acoustic record with like Norah Jones or some shit?
That was horrible.
But he did it. So that's what he was doing. He was already touring anyway. So the band stays in England and they're getting tighter and getting tighter and getting tighter. So you know who Miles Kennedy is? Do you know his name?
I do not.
He's the guy who sings in Slash's solo band.
Oh.
Remember Creed?
Yes. Okay. I do know Creed.
Creed's still together with a different singer. They're called Alter Bridge. That's Miles Kennedy.
Oh, okay.
So you've heard of Alter Bridge, I'm assuming.
I've heard of Alter Bridge. Yeah, they're kind of famous. It's funny how they all interconnect somewhere down the line.
So when Zeppelin's looking to, they're like, fuck it, we're going to just, and they weren't going to call it Zeppelin. They're going to call it something else and just go out and play Zeppelin songs. So Miles Kennedy came in and he auditioned and they brought in fucking Steven Tyler. And to him, he's like, he grew up on Zeppelin. This is his favorite band. And your boy, Jimmy Page, could not handle him. He was like, he has to leave today. I don't want to see him again. They're like, okay. And they just kind of pulled him out. He's like, oh, I'm Steven Tyler. Let's do it.
With Jimmy Page is self-reserved where, you know, Steven Tyler was
out of his fucking mind.
Man.
Out of his fucking mind. Even like drugs, just out of his fucking mind. Like, that fucking, you ever seen the interviews?
He's like one of those chihuahuas that are moving around all the time.
But so's fucking Roth, really. Like, oh, I like to think sure. Roth, I mean, Roth's genius level. He has a great IQ. But he's fucking nutty, bro. Have you seen him on the Joe Rogan podcast recently?
No, I haven't.
Out of his fucking mind.
No.
And he just goes off on these tangents. And he's like laughing to himself because only he gets the joke. Which I guess is kind of cool, actually.
Well, if you're him, it's cool.
You know, David Lee Roth never got divorced. So he's got mountains of money. So Alex Van Halen is going to play the last five shows as the drummer for David Lee Roth.
Wow, okay.
How fucking cool is that? I'm surprised.
You know, I just saw an interview where Gene Simmons just...
apologized?
Well, you know, before he apologized, okay. Made that off comment
I know.
About David Lee Roth. I thought that was kind of creepy. I thought that, you know, the guy, you know, Gene Simmons in his own right is a genius, you know, marketing, you know. I mean...
Can I tell you, you're a Kiss fan, right?
Yeah.
You know, Paul Stanley kind of told the truth on this. Did you read Paul Stanley's book?
I have his autobiography. As a matter of fact, that's one of the audiobooks I'm listening to now.
It's a great listen, isn't
it?
It's
amazing.
To hear him read it.
He does his own narration.
I'm doing my own narration for my book right now. It's hard as fuck, by the way. Hard as fuck. But I get it. So, in the book later, as you're listening, he's going to tell you that Gene's not a marketing master.
Oh.
All the original marketing was Bill Acoin.
Bill Acoin.
And his company, right? Then they fire Bill Acoin, which is fine because they had drama, which will come up in the book. You'll get there. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, Bill Acoin literally went bankrupt almost for Kiss.
But then he fucked it all up. And like, it's weird because I don't know if Paul's lying or embellishing. You're going to get to it in the book. He kind of was like molestering a kid and kind of using the Kiss name to do it. And this upset Paul tremendously. And they were kind of like, because it was the 70s and it was weird. And then, I don't know if you know this, Bill Acoin managed Billy Idol.
No, I did not know that.
So Billy Idol became a huge fucking star. That's Bill Acoin. He did that.
I'm a huge Bill Acoin fan. Not knowing that tidbit of information.
The molestery stuff?
I don't know if I necessarily believe it. I'm not saying it did happen or didn't, but I want to keep my head buried in the sand. But
well, go ahead.
You know the Dress to Kill album?
The clothes didn't fit them because they had that a bar of suits.
So they're all Bill Acoin's.
Not all Bill.
Oh, I read where he's in an interview. He said they were all his.
I didn't see one of them. I didn't know that.
He said he opened the closet because this was the last... You know, they had Fallon Records.
Oh, yeah.
He put his house up for mortgage.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, listen, this is all I have. You take what you want out of this. And that's why, like, you know, with Gene.
It's like,
short.
Yeah.
Allegedly, this is from Bill.
That might be true.
That was all
his suit.
Personal suits.
Dress to Kill.
Which was not a great album.
Well, here's the thing with, all right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a pretty big Kiss fan. Like Love Gun, right? All right, so, fuck it. We can delve into Kiss all day. My dear friend, Johnny Zero. who's crazy, but he's a really good guy, and I love him.
That's the best kind
of
guys.
He's the biggest KISS fan on the planet Earth. So for real, we should do a podcast, the three of us, one day, and just discuss KISS for 5 hours.
I'm in.
He will kill it. He knows everything.
Let me check my schedule. No, I'm free.
No, we got to get him here. He's like a thing. He's kind of agoraphobic. He doesn't leave his house. It's a thing. Like, he's a handful.
No, I understand it.
But he's a great person. He'll come here for New Year's, maybe, if I'm lucky. So anyway, fucking Johnny Zero will tell you anything you want to know about KISS. Anything. He knows it all, right?
That's amazing.
And there was I lost my thread. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. What were we just discussing about KISS? It was Dressed to Kill. Yes, okay. If you listen to the individual albums, there's great songs on every record, but there's a lot of fillers that aren't so good.
Now, are you talking about their solo albums or their
The records before Alive.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of nonsense.
It's weird because it's the 70s and they're finding their sound. Like, Strutter is great.
Strutter's real good.
All right, here. You know about the whole story, I'm assuming, with the producer who made, I can't think of the name of the record. Not Dynasty. Hold on. Destroyer. Do you know that whole story?
Maybe if you lead me in.
The producer from Alice Cooper, I can't think of his name. He's the guy who did Revenge, too, years later. He did
God gave rock and roll to you.
Oh, I love that fucking song.
Great song.
Isn't it? They didn't write it, though. It's a rewrite.
No, it's definitely a rewrite.
Yeah, I love that definitely fucking song. And that video with Eric Carr's last video.
As much as I'm a Peter fan, I'm just as much of a Eric Carr.
How far are you into the Paul book? He kind of bashes him a little bit.
I kid you not, I started Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. You might be a little...
I listened to it when, you know...
You might get a little mad at Paul.
You know, Paul is very self-centered to begin with.
I agree.
And I'm not saying... I'm still a great musician.
All right, hold on. He's not a great fucking musician. Just so we're clear. He's okay.
All right. You know what?
I'll give you a list of great musicians. He ain't one of them.
Okay, as a KISS fan.
No, but as a KISS fan, he's good. But he knows he's not great.
And, you know, and I told you this, I think, the other day, that I feel that they have already played themselves out. You could tell that Paul doesn't have the voice he has. And that...
Well, he's old.
Yeah, but you know what? It's time to hang it up.
They are hanging it up.
Yeah, for the third time, yeah.
You're right, though. Yeah. I thought it was technically... Is it the third?
When I saw them in the late 90s, it was their farewell tour. That's when they all got back together.
Well...
Come on, how many farewell tours do you need?
All right. I mean, if you want to get... let's talk KISS for real. So, they do the Halloween special that comes out in 95. Oh, no.
Oh, 95.
Halloween acoustic.
Oh, yeah.
Unmakeuped KISS does the Halloween special. Yes. They wheel in Peter Criss.
Yes.
They wheel in Ace, who looked awful. But they sounded so good.
That was the unplugged version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they were like, okay. And do you know who the manager is?
At the time.
Still is. Doc McGee.
Doc McGee.
But he's the Motley Crue manager, the Bon Jovi manager. He's the guy. So Doc McGee's like, you know, this might be the time to do it. Get the band back together, you know. And so they went and they had the meeting. And they sold out Tiger Stadium in 8 minutes. A stadium. So, like, okay, it's on. Now, if you're going to get deeper, I'm going to ruin so much of the book. I apologize.
No, you're fine.
They're saying that Ace was so fucked up, he didn't remember his own songs. So, Tommy Thayer, who's the current guitar player, who Johnny Zero fucking hates.
So does Ace Frehley.
Obviously. But Tommy Thayer was the fucking tour manager back then.
Yep.
So he sat in a room with Ace, guitar, amp, and taught him the songs again.
Yep.
And then he had to do the same thing with Peter. Because when, I know this from experience, you never stop playing. You get better every year. You just do. You just get better. If you stop for 5 years, like, we've had musicians leave the band and come back and jam 5 years later, and we're so far ahead of them, it's like embarrassing for everybody. Like, and that's what happened to KISS. But I've had it happen in my life, so I know it's a real thing. KISS never stopped playing arenas, ever. They just didn't. They just played big. So you got like, da-da, and big moments and movements. And then you have Peter Criss playing clubs that I play. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, it got like,
Well, you know, I think that they thought they were indispensable, Peter and Ace, in the early...
Well, they were early on.
Maybe even the early 80s. What was it? Creatures of the Night wasn't even Ace Frehley, even though he was featured on
the cover.
On the cover. It was... Vinnie Vincent. Anka Boy. Anka Boy.
Do you know who invented the Ankh makeup?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No, who invented the Ankh makeup?
Oh, no, I don't know who...
That was Paul.
Paul did. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm probably going to get smacked by your viewers here, but I actually preferred Paul in his raccoon makeup versus the star.
Do you mean the bandit with this thing?
Yeah, the bandit.
You know, it's funny. Johnny Zero says the same thing.
I like him in his
and
bandit,
then he said that when Tommy Thayer took the gig, Tommy Thayer should wear the bandit makeup and not wear the spaceman makeup. Which kind of makes sense,
it
actually.
Did, but I think what they did is they were more, it was a vengeance thing to slap Ace and Peter because they thought they owned the rights to that makeup.
Well, no, they did own the rights.
They sold out?
Well, to come do the reunion tour, they signed them over.
Right.
And Peter didn't know he signed it over, to be honest with you. He didn't know. But that was in the contract, which is 45 pages long and in triplicate, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a thing called Favored Nations that Peter Criss thought he was a part of. So he was getting X amount of dollars, and so was Ace Frehley, and they had one attorney. When it came back for the next tour, Ace is fucking Ace Frehley, bro. So they gave him more money, and they didn't raise Peter, but Peter thought he was Favored Nations, so he thought it was the same, and it wasn't. It was doing this. So by the end of like that last tour, he went to Peter's hotel room, and he told him. The day before, he's like, or there were like five shows left. He's like, listen, I'm really sorry. This entire tour, I made like $800,000 more than you. And I feel so guilty and I'm very sorry. So then Peter, I don't know if you know this, he played Madison Square Garden and he started putting a teardrop in his makeup.
Oh. Wow. No, I learned something.
Oh, yeah. So then that gets all fucked up. So now they're doing the big last trek. And they're back on the road. I see the Instagram. They're posting it. They're going to do it. They say that Ace Frehley's probably going to pop into a show here and there.
I read that.
My friend Johnny Zero is 100% convinced that Peter Criss is going to show up. Peter's in his 70s now, though, and he survived breast cancer. I don't see it happening. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that'll give him the closure, or give them all the closure that they need. You know, I feel like it's as long as they don't continue it, it's a one show off. I think it's a great idea.
So not a tour?
Not a tour, no. I mean, as much as I would love the original group to come back, the dynamic is working for them now.
Okay.
I mean, Eric Singer was a champ all along. You know, you're coming in. You're a singer. Okay, we got to let you go. Peter came back. Oh, you know, we need you back. You know, he's been
no,
loyal.
No, but for 10 years before he was that guy in 91 to join Kiss after Carr died, he was in Black Sabbath. He was in Lita Ford's band.
Oh, yeah.
That's his job. His job's to come in and fill the role. And there's no definite... Dude, you can't. You can do Kiss now, I guess, without it. But when you were doing a reunion in '96, we're the same age. I got fucking goosebumps. They put that video on MTV. They're playing fucking, what's that? I Love It Loud. No, shout it out loud, dude. Oh my god, I was a fucking little kid again. You know what I mean? Like, it was amazing
because the dynamic was there.
Not even that. There's nostalgia for real, bro.
And they didn't sound that bad back in '96, too.
Well, it depends who you talk to, but they actually sounded great. And then as it went on and on, like, drugs changed. So Ace Frehley really got into pills, man. Like, really got into pills.
And alcohol.
No, he always was an alcohol. But the pills on top of it was, like, making it way worse.
I think the best, quote-unquote, alcoholic interview that Ace Frehley ever had was when he was on with...
Tomorrow.
Mike Douglas. Was it not?
Not Mike Douglas. It's the other one. Snyder, Mike Snyder.
Yeah, Snyder. That was amazing.
I'm a plumber. Yeah.
And with his crazy laugh.
You're going to get there.
Hey, Gene, you're playing a fish? He kept on calling it whatever.
And Gene was fucking livid.
They were both livid.
And Paul was livid.
They were both livid.
They were fucking out of their minds.
They were. I think that was the beginning of the end almost.
I 100% agree. That was really the turning point.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for you with the ball. You got to come back after you fucking hear the whole Paul book. We have to discuss it.
I know. Now
I've read it.
Accelerate listening today.
I've read it, and then when I found his like audio, I got free audio on YouTube. I didn't buy it. Like, it was just on YouTube, dude. It was so good. He's really good at reading his book, dude.
But you know, he's a very artistic person. He does a lot of painting.
Yeah, I'm rolling my eyes. Watch this.
I know, but you know what though?
Hey, and he was in fucking Phantom of the Opera. He's like, I was born with one ear, so I really this character I identify with. Okay, Paul.
Yeah,
I guess.
I know that's a big chapter about his ear and how it made him insecure.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, get over it. Everybody has defects. It doesn't define.
No,
it.
Dude, in the '60s when you can't grow your hair long and not having one ear. Look, I was a weird kid. I had my fucking ears. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a big deal. And do you know he's bald now? You know that, right?
Oh, they all have extensions.
No, no, but he's bald. So he went out to a party because he has a new ear and he's like a bald guy. I'll show you a picture of it. It's fucking awesome.
I need to see this.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how I didn't see this.
It's a fucking famous picture. If you talk, I'll pull it
maybe
up right
I've
now.
Seen it. Yeah, you know what though? If you're going back onto that, especially. When they were shooting themselves in the foot early, was that Kiss Me So Fair in the Park.
But see, they didn't know.
They were tricked.
They just didn't know. They weren't savvy.
Well, no, they were told that it was one thing, and then when it was released, it was totally different.
It's going to be like, you know, Star Wars meets a monster movie.
Great.
That's real.
And he still kind of rocks it.
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm not wrong being a bald guy. Just saying. I understand completely. It's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. How would you know?
Yeah, you have a beautiful head of hair. You have no idea. Okay. I was really young when it fell out, bro. So like it was like awkward. I was like really thin and like fucking, I looked like a cancer patient. It was bad. It was all bad.
Yeah, those are the days of being thin. They're over.
Whatever. If you're inclined, you could change your life.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
What, you eat bad stuff, I'm assuming?
Define bad stuff.
I eat garbage, pretty much. That's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 242 pounds. I shouldn't be 242 pounds.
We're almost the same weight.
That's 6 foot. But you're 6 foot, like 6 foot eight.
But I'm not, though.
About 6 foot two?
I'm not even 6'1".
No.
True story. I just got measured.
Well, what'd you get measured with? A yardstick?
Two episodes ago, the nurse came to my house. All right, so I have life insurance with State Farm. I got it during my first marriage. It's an obscene amount of money. And it's for a long time. I got it like fucking 2004, right? So it's 30 years. So now I'm staggering another policy so I can, if I'm up to my 70s, I'll still have coverage, right? But you're fucking, I'm old. So they got to come and do blood pressure and blood work and blah, 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 and the measurements. And she came over and she did it. So that just happened. And then she was so cool, she was on the podcast.
See, you have that charm on people.
I don't know about that. So yeah, that happened. So they just measure me. So I'm a little under 6'1". I'm not even 6'1". I used to be 6'1". I'm shrinking.
Or maybe slouching. But you don't
slouch. Dude, I didn't slouch. If I was getting measured, I would be like, hey, I'm a giant, you know. But it's all perception. But we're like the same fucking height.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you got...
You're wrong. And you have beautiful hair, so fuck you. You don't even know my pain.
I'm maybe tall because of the hair.
How long have you had a goatee?
Probably a couple years. Because it hides the double chin.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. That's the best thing ever.
Interesting. When it was in style in the 90s, I couldn't connect. I would have like this, and I would have this, but I didn't have this down
in the middle. Not that you're staring at me, but this is not a mustache. This is just scraggly hair. The only thing that makes it is this gray blob down
there. It's a mustache. We're old men. It's a mustache at this point. You're in denial, my friend. You look in the mirror, and you see a 13-year-old boy, but trust me, sir, you are very much a man.
I'll tell you, who's that guy with the mustache, the white hair, manly guy?
James Hetfield?
No. Yeah. Yeah, he is a manly...
Hey, we're in Metallica.
Yeah,
I don't like Metallica.
Napster.
Well, that was 1,000 years ago. They were right, though.
Oh, they were absolutely right.
Who knew?
But they were absolutely right, and I never stole all their albums.
Well, you know.
Only half of them.
They don't need any money. I think they're okay. At least when Trujillo joined, they gave him $1 million. Did you ever see some kind of monster documentary?
No.
What kind of fan are you?
I know.
I'm not even a fan, and I saw that shit in the theater.
I am so weird when it comes to documentaries.
Really?
Explain. I just don't know why. I don't have...
So you didn't watch Tiger King?
Yeah. Well, of course I did. You do know my wife and her liking cats, right?
No, but she didn't like it, she told me.
No, she loved it.
But she was anti because it was kind of like weird.
No, she didn't like... what's her face?
Carol Baskin. Carol fucking Baskin! If you look, bro...
Killed her.
Look behind you. Do you see the silver frame? That's an autographed picture. Of the Tiger King.
How did you get him? Did you go visit him in jail?
And it turns out anything you send him, he will sign and send back. Anything.
I got to do this for her.
Yeah, anything. So I have friends, right? And I was really into it. And this friend of mine just bought me for Christmas last year. And he just showed up like, oh my God. And I had to go buy a frame. I was so excited.
Listen, if he was running for governor of PA, I would have voted for him.
Okay, let's not say things we don't mean, my friend. No, he's all right. I feel like he should be out, to be honest with you. Like, he did some fucked up things.
Oh, he did, but the crime didn't... The punishment
didn't fit the crime. This is pretty heavy. No. I really thought that the previous president on his way out the door was going to fucking pardon him. I really did.
Yeah, you know, I think somebody tried to talk sense into him, and he finally listened for once.
Oh, he doesn't listen. That's his thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, you're right.
That guy. You think Junior will run? That's the theory I heard.
No, I don't.
He's charismatic.
He is very charismatic, but I don't. If he does run, it would probably not be in 2024.
You want to get older first?
I think he needs a little more wisdom behind his belt there.
I don't know. I like his policies.
You talking about Eric? Or are you talking about Don Jr.? Of course, that was.
I just dropped a pen.
Of course, that was a joke.
Is Eric kind of retarded? Are we allowed to say retarded? The great Norm MacDonald passed away.
Oh, my God.
And he got caught saying retarded on TV, and then he changed it to Down syndrome. He's like, you gotta have Down syndrome. And then he got in a lot of trouble.
You know why I like Norm MacDonald?
Because he's amazing.
Because he doesn't give a fuck.
He gave lots of fucks,
no,
it turns out.
It maybe as a personal thing, but his comedy...
was irreverent.
Very.
My greatest... I love this. They go to him. He's the news guy for Sunday Night Live Weekend Update. And they were like, listen, the guy who owns and runs the network is really good friends with O.J. Simpson. stop saying OJ jokes because he got acquitted. They were like, you're done. The very next week, he gets on. He's like, turns out murder is legal in California. Big picture OJ.
He never liked to be told what to say.
Ever.
And he did a comedy roast I just literally just saw. And who was it for? I can't remember.
It was Bob Saget.
It was?
And he said, Bob, when you go to the bathroom, it's going to say gentlemen. Just ignore that and go inside anyway.
And everybody, the audience was in awe and surprised that he was quote-unquote bombing. And he wasn't bombing.
He was killing.
He was killing it. The people on the stage were laughing harder than they ever did because they knew what
he was
doing.
Well, real comedians know how brilliant it was.
He was brilliant.
And he didn't swear and he didn't belittle anyone.
Nope.
It was pretty good.
It was totally opposite of Norm MacDonald, which made it even...
Well, no, it was opposite of what he was... Here's what he said later. He's like, I really do love Bob Saget. He's one of my dearest friends. I have nothing but affinity for him. I'm not going to get up there and talk shit about him. He's my friend. I love him. You're making me do this for the money. All right, I'll do it, but I'm going to do it my way.
And he did it his way.
I got news for you, Lee. I don't know if you know this, my friend. Hold on. This is my big dramatic moment that I'm fucking up. In fact, it's been an hour.
Wow.
Swear to God. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode number 112 of the Vex on Vex podcast. The Vex on Vex podcast can be heard on the Loud and Loaded Network under the Podbean application on your phone. Lee, thank you.
Thank you very
much. Fun, right?
Very.
We'll do more.
Excellent.
All right, everybody, stay frosty.